Someday in America, there won't be a need for airplanes or automobiles at all.
We used to have the ability to go from any place in America to anywhere else in America, this is recently as the 1950s, without a car and without flying.
Used to? America's transportation system is just one part of the infrastructure that's evolving back toward the 21st century. The new urbanists descend on Denver, Colorado to rethink cities, riding the rails from coast to coast. It's not just for hobos anymore. It's The Takeaway.
All across America, this is The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI.
Good morning, everyone. Wednesday, June 10th. We're kicking off a great series, Waiting for the Train, this morning. I'll explain what that means a little later. I'm John Hockenberry, here with Farai Chidea. Good morning, Farai.
Good morning. Great to be here. Coming up, we've got a new twist on the old story of Guantanamo Bay. Plus, if you think campaign advertising is nasty, well, take a look at what companies are saying about each other in their ads. The bad economy is forcing advertisers to go negative in the fight for your dollar, but it might backfire. We'll take a look at the latest ad trend. That and more ahead, but first, the headlines.
And in the headlines, the courts have a verdict for Chrysler. The U.S. Supreme Court rejected a challenge to Italian carmaker Fiat's bid to buy Chrysler, and a bankruptcy court approved the plan to terminate nearly 800 dealer franchise agreements. Auto analyst Harley Shaken says the Fiat deal had to go through, or else Chrysler could have shut down and been sold off bit by bit.
Had the sale been interrupted to any significant degree, then the very likely outcome would have been liquidation and thousands, if not tens of thousands, of jobs would have been lost.
The Fiat Chrysler deal is expected to close shortly. General Motors is also cutting off hundreds of dealers, but a handful of them can now stay on. GM says up to 20 dealers will be allowed to stay open. All told, GM is ending deals with some 1,100 dealerships.
Oil is also on a tear this morning. It blasted through the $70 a barrel mark and kept rising. It's now at a 2009 high, but well below last year's record prices. 17 Guantanamo Bay detainees caught in legal limbo will soon have a new home. The Pacific island of Palau will take them in. The detainees are Chinese Muslims, members of the Uyghur minority. The Pentagon says they're not enemy combatants. They said that some time ago, but they can't be released to China because they might face persecution. So the Obama administration has been looking for a country that would take them. Palau is a former U.S. territory with a long history of close ties to America, and we'll have a conversation about this in a little bit.
You could do worse than be exiled to Palau, that's for sure. In sports, the L.A. Lakers are still in the driver's seat in the NBA Finals. The Orlando Magic coming back, winning last night. The Lakers now hold a 2-1 edge in the series. The next game is tomorrow night, and the Penguins forced a decisive Game 7 in the Stanley Cup. It's 3-3, Penguins and Red Wings. Good news there in Detroit. So if you're a judge, how creative can you be if you're sentencing, say, white-collar criminals? We're going to be talking to a judge this morning who sentenced a white-collar criminal to write a book about his crimes as part of the punishment.
I will not take money. There you go.
No, it had to be a whole book. He couldn't repeat. And maybe he didn't have spell check either. So you be the judge this morning on The Takeaway. If you could sentence Madoff or someone in the AIG scandal or a white-collar criminal of any kind, come up with a creative sentence, all right? 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake@thetakeaway.org. You be the judge. Be creative.
The Takeaway is made possible by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, encouraging discussion about what it means to do the right thing. ResponsibilityProject.com.
The Takeaway is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and by the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, advancing journalistic excellence in the digital age. More information about the Foundation's digital initiatives at knightfoundation.org.
You're listening to The Takeaway.
I went around a train station, waiting for that train.
Thank you, Jimi Hendrix. Good morning, everyone. Waiting for the train. In a sense, we're all waiting for the train as we begin the task of rethinking, for energy reasons, for environmental reasons, for economic reasons, rethinking how we live in America's cities. All week long, we're waiting for the train. You can wait for the train right with us here on The Takeaway. It's our series on rethinking urbanism in America. And Matt Dellinger, transportation writer, friend of The Takeaway, the sun isn't even up there in Denver, Colorado. What are you doing in Denver?
It sure is not up yet in Denver, Colorado. Hello, John. Basically, I guess I'm on a safari of sorts. I'm in Denver for the Congress for the New Urbanism, which is a yearly conference of sort of the leading progressive planners and architects and activists. And every year they pick a city and they go there and meet and they use the city as their laboratory. And so for the next few days, I too will be sort of wandering around and not wandering, purposefully walking around, driving even. And talking to people about the changes happening here.
Oh, that's great. Just don't get arrested, okay, as long as you're doing it. The idea of just Matt Dellinger sort of doing a safari in the middle of Denver scares me a little bit. Let's hear the voices of some of the people you met on the train ride you took from where to where?
Well, I got on in San Francisco, Emeryville to be exact.
All right. Well, here's the voice of Bill Lynn. Explain to me what this sort of is all about.
We used to have the ability to go from any place in America to anywhere else in America, this is recently as the 1950s, without a car and without flying. That is an enormously important national security safety net, and the basis of it is streetcars within cities and passenger trains between cities.
So, Matt Dellinger, who is Bill Lynn, and are we going backwards or forwards here in this new urbanism mission?
Well, they might be the same thing. Bill Lynn is a director at the Free Congress Foundation. It's a sort of ultra-conservative think tank, and he has been for a while now an advocate for rail and transit, which is a rare breed among conservatives, and he does see it as a national security issue. But, you know, I also happen to know he loves trains because we rode the California Zephyr in these historic old cars. They were dome-top cars.
Oh, fabulous.
Called the Silver Solarium, right through the canyons and the mountains. It was amazing. And the entire he was on for much of the time, and he was just thrilled, and he ordered us all Brandy's Alexander because they were the favorite drink of his favorite railroad writer.
That was a throwback.
Ian Frimbo.
Well, yeah, we want to get you started on your safari this morning. We actually have the mayor of Denver to talk to in just a moment. So get started on your safari. We're going to look at the infrastructure and start rethinking American cities all week long here on The Takeaway. The New Urbanists, that's the name of these guys?
Yes, the Congress for the New Urbanists.
Congress for the New Urbanists. All week long, we're waiting for the train. Matt Dellinger, thanks so much. And because we are in Denver for this event and kicking off this series this morning, John Hickenlooper, the mayor of Denver, who's already been working to make big changes in and around his city, spoke with us. And I asked him whether he thinks being the mayor is the way to go for inspiring big changes, making changes in the way Americans live and work.
I think mayors are where the real change is starting. If you look at sustainability all across the country and really across the world, it was generally in mayors, in the office of mayors, that where people first started saying, how can we use less energy? How can we still maintain a quality of life and yet change our consumption patterns?
Well, let's talk about an example that you are familiar with. When you took office in 2003, you set to work on the Fast Tracks system, right? It's a light rail project that connects Denver to its fancy airport, right?
Well, and to all of our suburbs, it's actually six different lines that kind of arc out like the spokes of a wheel.
How can a mayor be a leader in a process like that politically when you have so many other political entities that you have to get on board?
Well, part of it is just collaboration. When I ran for mayor, a lot of the suburban mayors, some of them had given me advice when I was contemplating running, they were receptive to me coming out and talking to them and building relationships. So when we actually went to the voters in 2004 to ask for a 0.4-cent sales tax increase to build this new system, 119 miles of new track, we had all 32 mayors, so two-thirds of them Republicans, but from big cities like Denver and our neighbor to the east, Aurora, but also little teeny towns like Centennial and Foxfire, all 32 mayors unanimously supported that tax increase. And I think that's that sense of collaboration is what you really need to make things like this work.
Well, what you're describing also is evidence that these issues of sustainability and how the infrastructure supports or actually inhibits living in a city has suddenly emerged as a real issue. Listen to this. Here's Bill Vidal, manager of public works in Denver, and this is something he said in a PBS documentary called Road to the Future.
The Denver area started getting national rankings for congestion, and so it started at about 20th, and then it went to 15th, then it went to 7th, and at one time we were actually number 3. All of a sudden what used to be a half-hour rush hour became a 2 or 3 hour rush hour in the morning and a 2 or 3 hour rush hour in the afternoon.
John Hickenlooper, how has this become a real issue for Denverites in the sense that they're actually going to vote for things that are going to result in significant changes in the way they live?
You know, Denver is kind of the northern bulge of the Sun Belt, and we have a very high percentage of people that chose to live here, not for a job promotion or a career opportunity, but just for the quality of life. And I think that high percentage of people that came here for the quality of life makes them more willing to invest and to try and preserve and maintain that quality of life.
And once you get this sort of rail system in place, it's really just the beginning. There are harder projects ahead, correct?
Well, exactly. You have to keep building forward. Once we get fast tracks in place, you have to fill it in. It's just the bare skeleton. Bill Vidal, who you just heard, he used to be the head of the State Department of Transportation and then used to run our regional planning agency. He released last fall, the city of Denver released, a strategic transportation plan that instead of looking at car trips and do we need more lanes or exit lanes or whatever, it looks at person trips and treats all the major parts of the city as travel sheds, just like watersheds, but as collectors of people. So whether someone's using a bicycle or walking or using light rail and then a bicycle, the key is to really try and devise a system where it's not just all about the automobile.
Well, that describes sort of the decision that was made some years ago to create a beltway around Denver, which it turned out to be simply an exacerbator of all the problems it was trying to solve. How do cities avoid something like that?
I think cities have to recognize that the density is not a bad thing if done properly. So part of what we did with fast tracks, building this 119 miles of new track, is to, instead of taking it right out to the middle of the suburbs and putting a big parking lot around the stations, we designed it so that most of the stops are in old factory sites, old brownfields where the factory's been closed down, but there's a big open piece of land. And then whether it's in Denver or one of the suburbs, we worked very hard to get the zoning increased so people could build 4 and 6 and 8 story buildings with offices and housing and retail, and people could get a very high level of choices and a high quality of life traveling from one station to the next. That's the vision for the future.
And really, it is about vision. What gives you the confidence that this vision is going to be any better at predicting the future ways people are going to live than the past?
Well, you could never be certain of what the next generation is going to value. But certainly when we went out and talked to the suburban mayors and did focus groups with their citizens, we concentrated on, you know, even if the light rail line never comes to your suburb, you don't want to sit in traffic jams. No one likes sitting on a hot asphalt highway, you know, waiting for the person in front of them to move 4 feet. And our goal was to say, all right, if we get more people off their cars and into light rail, then the people that really benefit are those who are still driving in, but now, you know, get 20 or 30 extra minutes every day that they can spend either with their family or at work.
Mayor, if Denver can solve these problems, what's the lesson for communities around the United States?
Well, as you said at the beginning, we are a bit of a laboratory. And I think there is that very high level of civic engagement here. People collaborate from, you know, one suburb to the next to the downtown. And what we're really demonstrating, I think, is that if people listen and work together, they can accomplish things that would have even, you know, 10 or 15 years ago been considered impossible.
The mayor of Denver, Colorado, John Hickenlooper, he is quite literally waiting for the train, the light rail system that's going to transform that community. Matt Dellinger, so how are you going to sort of see in your trips around Denver exactly what the mayor is talking about there?
Well, interestingly, I'm going to go on one tour led by the Congress for the New Urbanism that looks at some of those stations he was talking about where they had to increase the zoning because you have a light rail line going out into the suburbs and it calls for a different kind of land use. I'm also going to be looking around the neighborhoods of Lodo, lower downtown, which used to be a kind of skid row, and it's now the first thing I saw when I stepped off the train was a Morton Steakhouse, so things have changed.
Well, the retrofitting of American cities is a dual process. It's about the outlying communities, which is what the light rail system is that the mayor was talking about, but it's also like rehabbing in a responsible way the inner cities, and that's what the Lodo is all about. All week long,
exactly.
We are waiting for the train and taking a look at cities using Denver as a laboratory. Matt, don't get into any trouble now, all right?
You guys will bail me out.
You know?
Won't you?
We actually
won't
will. Matt Dellinger, our safari and guide for the New Urbanist Convention in Denver, Colorado, as we rethink American cities. Oh, yeah, we're waiting for the train.
You can email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org or call us toll-free at 877-8-MYTAKE.
869-8253. NYC Now delivers the most up-to-date local news from WNYC and Gothamist every morning, midday, and evening. With three updates a day, listeners get breaking news, top headlines, and in-depth coverage from across New York City. By sponsoring programming like NYC Now, you'll reach our community of dedicated listeners with premium messaging and an uncluttered audio experience. Visit sponsorship.wnyc.org to get in touch and find out more.